As an added benefit to reoccurring donors, we are sending out DCO face masks to any monthly contributors for 3 months or more at the $5 plus level. Please send your size preference, either large or youth or small size, along with membership email and mailing address to info@dcontario.org. And you can check out what they look like in the show notes.
This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
This is Caitlin Plant, Program Manager for Distress and Crisis Ontario, and today I am joined by Sarah and Mifra from the Coalition of Muslim Women in Kitchener-Waterloo, and today we'll be discussing the topic of Islamophobia. So my first question for you is, what is Islamophobia?
Hi, Caitlin. Thank you so much for this invitation, for this opportunity. We are really pleased and, you know, grateful to you for asking us and on having a discussion about this topic. So Islamophobia, by definition, is an irrational fear or aversion to or discrimination against Islam or people who practice Islam, Muslims, or those who are perceived to be Muslims. So, you know, obviously Muslims are a target, especially maybe visible Muslims, invisible as well, but those who are perceived to be Muslims. So Sikhs are also many times targeted because of Islamophobia. And there is an intersection with race, because Muslims in Canada come from many of them are racialized, they are newcomers at times. So there is an element of racism and xenophobia that is really there's intersectionality in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for explaining that for us. My next question is, how do you experience this in your own lives?
I think we experience this there's a whole spectrum of experiences, from the more milder versions of, you know, a snide remark, for example, an assumption that you will be, you know, you're dangerous, sorry, some microaggressions, to full out violent attacks. So there's a whole spectrum. So questions like, oh, do you have any terrorist ideologies? Which is not an innocent question. It's like a very, very offensive question. And we get asked that a lot. Our kids get asked that in school. You know, when they're playing video games, often you see that the bad guys are dressed visibly like Muslim men. And then some kid may say, oh, your brothers are here, to a Muslim kid. And it's very, very harmful. Things are said in jokes sometimes, but they have a huge impact of, you know, alienation and, you know, othering the individual in front of you. And it's very hurtful. So from that to getting your hijab being ripped off or being shoved or just pushed, you know, or have the escalator doors closed on you when you were just about to enter. So those sort of things, you know, so it's a whole range from microaggressions to violence. I think most Muslims have had some experience with the other facing that. Mm-hmm. And I'd be lying if I'd say anybody's immune. Any Muslim would say, I've at least had some experience with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can share my experience. I was at a local swimming community swimming pool, ready to enter the pool. And this one lady who started shouting from the other end of the pool, if I've showered. So I was wearing, you know, sort of full sleeve suit and the pants were longer. And, you know, definitely it was very visible. My identity was really visible. And, you know, she started just making such a ruckus about, you know, have you showered, you people, where, you know, you don't do that. And so, you know, just those kind of, you know, instances, they definitely happen, you know, for some more visible Muslim women, there's this gendered aspect to Islamophobia where Muslim women are targeted more because many times we are more visible. Those who are covering and those who are wearing the scarf are more visible Muslim men. And then on top of that, obviously, there's racialization. There's the intersectionality of, xenophobia for Black Muslim sisters. For them, there is another layer of anti-Black racism as well. But yeah, you know, these experiences, if I'm saying they are pretty common, and everyone in our circle, you know, has had some experience or the other. And then, you know, we experience it in mainstream media, you know, the way news is constructed, is portrayed, the narrative that is, you know, the images that are portrayed, the aspects that are focused on. So there was one story where, Globin, there was one sort of research article that compared the coverage of Globe and Mail, where there was the day after like two major events. So it was a Quebec mosque shooting that happened in 2017. There was a coverage, you know, full page sort of coverage. Next day, you can see the main article, the main story was somewhat unrelated. And there was a side column dedicated to the Quebec mosque shooting that occurred in Canada, in Quebec, right? And then there was a comparison of the bombing that happened in Boston Marathon bombing that happened. And the front page of that was, the main story was about that bombing that happened in US, not mm-hmm. even in Canada. So just, you know, those instances many times when, you know, there is something like a violent act, if the term terrorism is used, then we know that, oh, okay, this perpetrator must have been a Muslim or perceived Muslim. If same violence, gun violence, or any kind of other violence is portrayed in the media, and if the word terrorism is not used, then, you know, we heave a sigh of relief that, okay, this, I mean, obviously violence is violence and it's, you know, so tragic, but, you know, but we know that this is not the perpetrator wasn't a Muslim. So these, you know, aspects of media are definitely seen every day in popular culture. Obviously, you have lots of movies, you know, Dark Zero, Dark 30 is coming to my mind. There's so many movies that portray, you know, those stereotypical bad guy Arab, and with the accent, with the clothing, those that is conveyed in books. You have, like, it's a very popular genre where, you know, the story about the oppressed Muslim woman is there, and then the, you know, violent Muslim man is there, and the story is around that sort of main theme. And when you go to the library and you see, like, you know, 20 books on that, it does, I mean, that is very real, sort of, you know, it does have impact, yeah. On that. So yeah, I mean, even teachers, like a friend of mine, she was saying how her daughter who had recently started covering her head, so the teacher insisted, they had some reading list or they had some book, a project, and the teacher insisted that my friend's daughter read the books that her teacher chose for her, mm-hmm. and which were mostly stories about oppressed Muslim women. Mm. So that's very subtle. It's not very overt, but, you know, this is happening in schools as well. And then you have an element of state-sanctioned Islamophobia as well. You have the secularism law, previously was billed, that is a law for the past 2 years. We have this law in Quebec City, which, you know, targets marginalized community. Unfortunately, I mean, it does target Muslim women because they've been trying to do this for 10 years. And this is the history that CMW has with, that was the genesis of Coalition of Muslim Women. But, you know, other minority communities are also impacted because of Islamophobia. So mm-hmm. Jewish community and Sikh community and Christian community, those who are wearing, you know, those religious symbols. Then you have CSIS, our intelligence group, surveilling Muslim students in universities, Muslim Student Association. Until very recently, you know, having only Muslim groups in the terrorist list that government has, you know, so those aspects are very real, and we, you know, experience it in our lives directly, indirectly, overtly, you know, in discreetly. So it's absolutely there. And
yeah. Well, I gotta say, it makes me very sad how many examples you were able to give them, and Yeah, I thank you for the honesty in sharing all of that. And my next question is what the impact of all of those things are on you, because obviously there has to be an impact, especially the examples that you gave about your children. Yeah, so what are you able to share with us about that?
Just with children, I think, you know, there's obviously a sense of alienation, there's low self-esteem, you know, the sense of identity is impacted. They're not proud of who they want to hide, where they come from, and their language, and you know, all that of their culture and their faith, and then they internalize it. I think that's really insidious, that you know, this narrative, Islamophobia narrative, is so powerful, and it's there's you know, so much in our mainstream media and conversations, and again, movies and the movies that they watch, the videos that video games that they play. That they internalize those images, and they think that even though you know they're seeing, they're watching, they're living with Muslims around them, but you know the power of culture is so strong that in their minds they internalize that this is who we are. You know, we are. There is terrorism. We are violent. We are barbaric. We are all that. So that internalization, especially by youth, by probably other Muslims too, but especially for youth, that's a very serious concern and very troubling.
And kids are watching and they're listening. Like just 2 months ago, it was the festival of Eid. There was someone who came to my house and they saw all the decorations going up and they asked, what is Eid? And you know, I kind of explained it to them. My kids are listening in, and the next question, this person snapped back, oh, but then what do you think about Osama bin Laden? And I just froze in my tracks. I'm like, my kids are watching, my kids are listening, and here is a moment of celebration. We're putting up balloons, making desserts, you know, we're being the decor. And I tried to be as not triggered as possible, because I knew I was setting an example for my kids. And I said, okay, how does that connect with this? And of course we denounce violence of any form, and there are violent people in every community. Mm-hmm. And you know, and she doubled down and saying, no, but then what does your Quran say? It's like, what does the KKK do? They use religion as you know, as a stick to justify whatever they want to, but why are you singling me out for this? Mm-hmm. And the kids are watching, they're listening. And just Sarah mentioned about media as well. It's not, we're talking about the Quebec mass shooting, but we know about the London attacks. If you see the headlines immediately after the attack, it was most had the narrative of car rammed into a family. Car, as if the car had its own agency. Mm-hmm. So when it's a Muslim perpetrator, there's a whole, you know, focus on his race, on his appearance, on his intentions. But when, you know, the tables are turned, when the Muslims are the victims, somehow a car just skids out of the street and hits a Muslim family. The first narrative was like, nobody talked about how it was intentional, that the killer didn't even know the family. He was actually on a hunt for Muslim-looking people and just, you know, rammed into them. So those narratives matter. And even Sarah talked about pop culture, like I keep telling my kids, when Aladdin, the movie that I grew up, all the good guys had American accents. The one bad guy, all was supposed to be Muslim. The one bad guy, Jafar, had a very, very immigrant accent. Those things are internalized. And somehow you think, okay, anyone with an internal, with an immigrant accent is dangerous, is evil, is scary. He must be excluded. Mm-hmm. So for people, they just think, oh, it's just art. It's just art. But art has an impact, especially if you are a minority marginalized group. Mm-hmm. And it leads to things like low self-esteem. We know so many victims of hate who won't come forward because they're so embarrassed. They think somehow they deserved it, that maybe we invited that kind of hostility by looking a particular way or dressing a particular way. And then you have these Muslim girls asking, is it safe for me to wear the hijab and go out? They want to wear it, but then my daughter does it, and she's been asked really, really mockingly, do you shower in that? And my, you know, I was like, does he shower in his clothes?
Yeah.
You know, but then it happens, and the kids are listening, they're watching, they're internalizing, and they are being impacted in more ways. And it's not just the kids. It's not just kids. I mean, adults get triggered as well. Mm-hmm. I know I do. Mm-hmm.
And then if I could add, you know, there's then really tangible aspects of Islamophobia as well, and the impact that it has. So, you know, loss of many opportunities. So in terms of financial opportunities, you know, in terms professional advancement opportunities or, you know, employment opportunities because of discrimination. There is, housing, so many times, and we hear this all the time, someone calling a rental like a GG ad or a marketplace ad, and, it's available, it's written that it's available, but they don't, but, you know, the responder, landlord says that, listening to the accent, that this house is not available. So housing, there is that, those very tangible, and there's actual violence. Obviously there's, when hate crimes occur, then there's actual violence that that obviously leads to fear, leads to just not being comfortable, going outside, lack of sense of belonging that it generates. So many, many different aspects.
Mm-hmm. It really sounds like it permeates all of your life in a lot of ways. And there are few, if any, areas where it doesn't come into play, which is heartbreaking. And yeah, Mifra, your example from Aladdin, that's a movie that I grew up watching as a kid. And I have never even realized that, which I am so privileged to be able to say that that's not something that I had even picked up on until you said that and pointed it out. And I went, wow, but how unfair that is that I've never had to notice that, right?
In the subtle sort of messaging, right? This mm-hmm. isn't overt messaging. This is the subtle messaging that these connections are made implicitly, not explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, when does it become overt? That when I came to Canada, I was an ESL teacher. I did my TESOL Canada, I took my TESOL Ontario. And when I was in one of the teaching practicum, one person told me, you'll never get a job here. You don't sound Canadian. And if you want to really get a job, work on your accent. And I think I mean this with all good intentions, that if someone wants to learn English, they'll want to learn it from, a Canadian. So, mm-hmm. It looks very innocent when it's in a movie, but then I had all the qualifications, but I was still being told, mm-hmm. I had 10 years of experience behind me, but I was being told that I need to sound a particular way. I didn't have to be the Jafar, I had to be Jasmine.
Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Again, I feel like that's one of those things, that there's going to be a lot of people like me who hear you say these things and feel are very privileged to have never had to notice that before. So you've given us some ways to recognize how it's happening around us and new ways to recognize these things. So what can we do about it when we see or experience these subtle and not so subtle experiences of Islamophobia?
I would say learn, listen, watch and read narratives by Muslims, by authentic Muslim voices. Too long and too many times we've had other people tell our stories, and it's always skewed. They don't really represent our experiences. And those experiences, when they come through that lens of an other person, an outsider, it's never authentic. It's hardly ever true. And it builds on those stereotypes, which are very dangerous, which look very innocent when they come in pop culture, but their impacts are very dangerous when they're lived in day-to-day lives. Mm-hmm. Listen to the stories, and there are a lot of stories which can be Canadian and Muslim. A lot of people think they're mutually exclusive identities. They're not. I know my kids who sometimes they say, oh mom, there's a Canadian who came to our door. It's what do you mean the Canadian? Because he was white. I was you can be Canadian and Muslim and brown, and you don't have to pick and choose any one of them. Mm-hmm. You can be as Canadian as the next door neighbor. So that dichotomy has to be addressed. Mm-hmm. There are so many great Canadian Muslim writers and musicians and artists and journalists, and they have amazing stories to tell, and they're great at their job. Don't give them the credit because they are the token, Muslim candidate that you must, check off your box. Yeah. They're doing great work in their fields, irrespective. They're great journalists. They're not just great Muslim journalists. They're just great journalists, for example. Mm-hmm. So listen, watch, read those narratives. That's the best way to learn, actually. Mm-hmm. Interact with Muslims, not in some exotic setting, in which you're invited to these ethnic nights and all, but maybe your coworker, maybe your neighbor, maybe your kid's classmate or their parents. It could be, you could be a teacher and you could just learn about your students. Just interact with them, listen to what their experiences are. And you'll most often find that they're not very different from the mainstream Canadian experience. Mm-hmm. What are personal beliefs? They're personal beliefs, but other than that, the cultural experiences are very similar. So this otherness has to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Muslims here are not the other. They're not foreigners. They belong here as much as anybody else. and they are contributing as Canadians. So that perspective is very important.
And excellent points by Mipra. I'll just add that, you know, when we when there is a comment or you see, read a story about you know, Muslims, and you know, there is a feeling, negative feeling generated by it, or any story, I think, to and how we counter Islamophobia is probably the same as we counter, you know, anti-Black racism or, you know, any anti-Semitic sort of issues, to apply that comment or that action to your own group or another group. So if there's a story about Muslims, then the way, then how would that story, the way that story is being presented, how would that apply to maybe, you know, an LGBTQ group? And, you know, then sometimes, you know, when we do that, that brings out the ways that, you know, there's the spin that is maybe there when one is able to see through that. Mm-hmm. So that may be one way. And we can, you know, definitely use many strategies, and we need to use so many strategies to counter this. You have advocacy, obviously, you know, for example, Bill 21 and the secularism law that is there. I mean, it's really harmful to Muslim women. You know, Muslim women in the niqab, they can't access, who are covering their face, they can't access public services. Mm-hmm. So they can't go to the hospital for their health. I mean, this is happening in Canada. And people have had to take refuge in, you know, they're refugees, like they're internally displaced people from Quebec. They had to leave Quebec and move to other provinces. So certainly there's advocacy at the, you know, obviously political level, at every political level, you know, federal, provincial, municipal. There's obviously advocacy, you know, for maybe private companies and organizations. There are trainings that one can anti-Islamophobia trainings. We offer it here at CMW, but other organizations also offer it. So arranging trainings, really being, you know, that person who is an ally in finding ways in your circle of influence, be it anywhere. If you're a manager, if you're a supervisor, if you're a, you know, executive, or, you know, you're a staff person in our circle of influence, how do we, you know, break the cycle and bring change? We can, you know, promote counter narratives, like Mifra was mentioning. We can have many bridge building activities with the Muslims and the larger community. Reporting is really important. You know, if there is discrimination, if there is racism happening, Islamophobia happening, then it's really important to report it, to document it, so that we know where is it happening, what is it happening. And actually, locally here in Waterloo region, we have a reporting tool for us to document racism, Islamophobia, xenophobia, and it's called reportinghate.com. And maybe we can. So yeah, those are some of the ways that we can do something about it.
Yeah. So I think in that answer, you did give us some ways that non-Muslim persons specifically can gain some cultural intelligence. I think your, yeah, examples of just listening and learning from just everyday people and those experts in the field are excellent. Is there any other suggestions that you would have for how we can kind of challenge our own values that we maybe have and we maybe don't even realize that we have in order to improve our understanding?
Question, a lot of people get lost in the definitions. What is Islamophobia? What is racism? You know, why don't we just all think, what is harm? You know, harm of any kind is bad. But don't categorize it. Think of, if I said this comment or if I did this action, would it harm somebody at some level? If the answer is yes, just don't say it. Just don't do it. And I understand that there's genuine curiosity at sometimes. And the CMW, for example, recognizes that so many of our programs address that. And we want to answer questions, but there's always this element of, what is my intention? Do I, am I asking this question because I just want to vilify somebody or just show them their place? Or do I genuinely want to listen or learn? Mm-hmm. We know we have many programs like Race Circles. A Race Circles program invites controversial questions, but with civility. We know that people have questions. They don't want to be labeled as Islamophobe or racist, but they have these genuine questions. And we have a space designated for those discussions. We have Tea and Tales, which is less confrontational. It's just calling people from the non-Muslim community to come down and share some traditional tea and snacks with real Muslim women and listen to their authentic experiences. Mm-hmm. We have collaborations with so many public institutions like the libraries and the museums. Like we celebrate Islamic History Month. We have so much programming there. We have art exhibitions for Islamic art. We have, you know, Eid al-Adha program, Ramadan events with the libraries and stuff. And I'm saying this is in the Waterloo region alone. Mm-hmm. If anybody looks deeper, they will find a lot of ways to, you know, experience these, to learn in their own communities. Just being an ally doesn't mean just, you know, doing a hashtag on social media. Get to know what's happening in your local communities. And I bet there must be a lot being happening all across Canada. Mm-hmm. This is just what CMW is doing in the Waterloo region. And there are so many programs. Like as Sara said, there's also this hate reporting tool that we have. Report, document those incidents. Unless we have hard data, policies won't change. Mm-hmm. We are going to leverage that data and give it to our policymakers. And look, we have this staring in your face. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. So much of hate goes underreported or unreported. Mm-hmm. So those kind of efforts, and every little bit counts. You don't have to do everything, the whole gamut of, you know, options. Do a little bit, you know, in your everyday life. Mm-hmm. And small things make a change.
Yeah. And you know, in terms of non-Muslims, community members, our neighbors, our friends, gaining cultural intelligence. I mean, certainly, you know, reading history is really important. Just history of colonization, not just in Canada, but around the world. That's really important. You know, just reading about globalization and, you know, how we call it globalization as if other cultures and everyone is contributing and there is a global sort of value system that is there and that is forming by everyone's contribution. But really, no, it is a very Western sort of system and a bit hegemonic as well, you know, our influence. And I'm a Western, I am in the West, so I that is part of my identity. Mm-hmm. So our value system is very, you know, our influence in cultural industry, in the movies, you know, that is there. So learning about those aspects is really important. And, you know, there is, so understanding where that is coming from in our political power, in our, you know, foreign politics and foreign sort of aspects. So that would, you know, learning about that, knowing our policies, foreign policies, is really important. And then how it impacts other differently will improve our understanding as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Mifra, you mentioned a few of the different resources that you offer yourselves at the Coalition of Muslim Women in Kitchener-Waterloo. Are there any other specific resources that you would like to kind of shout out for both the non-Muslim community that's trying to learn more, or for those in the Muslim community who are experiencing Islamophobia and just need that extra little bit of support?
I just wanted to add that the hate reporting system that we have not just records hate incidents, but also provides one-on-one support to victims. So anybody who requires anything, and they don't have to necessarily be Muslim. As Sarah mentioned, there's intersectionality. Sometimes you just perceive Muslim, or maybe you're just Black or Indigenous, or, you know, you just experience racism in any form. We are here to help and provide support. Other than that, you can think of the National Canadian Council of Muslims, NCCM. They have a lot of resources. There's a Nasiha helpline, which actually provides mental health supports to, you know, people who have been impacted by Islamophobia, for example, and other things, you know, not just necessarily Islamophobia. And we have actually a very exhaustive list of resources in terms of books and podcasts and, you know, YouTube channels and, you know, nonfiction documentaries, etc. And we'd be happy to share that, because it's quite a lot long list, and I can't just remember all the resources on that list. But
that can be found, like, on your website for the Coalition of Muslim Women.
It's not on the website yet. We are actually revamping the website a bit, but we can actually share it with you, and you can put it as a link.
Perfect. Okay.
Commentary.
Sara, anything else that you'd like to add for those resources?
Yeah, for the what my friend mentioned, absolutely, we do have. So there's Noor Cultural Center that has many short sort of videos on Islamophobia. So we can provide that list. There's so many documentaries that are, you know, are about Muslim and his, for example, Islamic art. You know, like that's such an amazing resource about Muslim life within Canada, outside, in other parts of the world. And just today, actually, I was listening to this, I think, a US-based center that just put out a documentary about the influence of Muslim and Islamic architecture on Western culture as well. And, you know, just learning about, so you know, those many of those resources are in our resource list. We have a very active Facebook page. So Coalition of Muslim Women has a separate page, and it's very active. So Facebook, if you are on Facebook, then please connect with us. We are on Twitter as well. So there's that. And then on Facebook, there is specifically Together Against Islamophobia, which is our program. There's a page specifically for that program as well. So both are really active pages and are really, you know, this center provide resources and they just sort of news and really relevant works that are related to the topic. Yeah.
So before we wrap up today, my final question is whether or not there's anything else that you would like to add that we haven't already talked about.
I would just say be an ally, and not just to Muslims, to everybody who needs it. Mm-hmm. We are very conscious about the fact that there are many other marginalized communities who don't necessarily identify as Muslim, and our heart goes out because we've experienced that hate firsthand so many times on so many levels. We are very cognizant of the harm that has been caused to other communities as well. Mm-hmm. So anyone who has been victimized at some point can be an ally also. It doesn't have to be that only one dominant group has to be an ally. So we can be allies to somebody else, like Muslims can be allies to somebody else and others can be allies to Muslims. We just need that circle of allyship to just continue. Mm-hmm. As I said, don't be so obsessed or focused on what kind of hate is this? What kind mm-hmm. of harm is it? Harm is harm. Violence is violence. Hurt is hurt. Just focus on that. And I believe we can build a better society just with mm-hmm. that principle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this conversation is definitely very brief and, you know, we could go, we have a 7-hour long training that we do. So there's definitely a lot that we can discuss and, you know, but I think we've covered quite the basics and yeah, hopefully this will be a start of conversation and, you know, we are happy. We are here as a resource. If anyone wants to connect with us, we are happy to do so. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I know that I myself have learned a lot today and I really appreciate your honesty and your openness and yeah, your willingness to teach and to share. And we appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
Hi, I'm Damien, one of the editors of the DCO Learning Forums podcast. We are committed to providing the most current and up-to-date information. With your help, we can make it better. Please consider going to tips.pinecast.com/jar/distress-and-crisis-ontario.com or by clicking the link in the show notes. And by donating, monthly contributors will be able to access a special podcast feed. In it, we'll have additional content and some more in-depth pieces on some of our most popular topics. Thank you.